My Outdoor Buddy radio listeners, this is your host Frank Galusha once again, and we're going to continue our discussion that we began in the last segment with Liz Bowen of Protect Our Waters up in Siskiyou County, with a discussion with John Menke, a Quartz Valley resident. That's near Fort Jones, by the way. And John is a PhD and has literally decades of experience in the ecology of that area, and he is a how would you describe your title again, John?
Well, we're a range systems ecology with a lot of quantitative ecology. Trained there at Fort Collins, Colorado, during the period of quantification and modeling of grassland ecosystems back there, short grass prairie.
All right. Well, if you would give our listeners your take on the current squabble between the Department of Fish and Game, organizations such as the Klamath River Keeper, and the local ranchers and farmers with respect to water rights, their Fifth Amendment rights, actually, and the needs of the fish. In particular, would you talk to us about the coho salmon, how the coho got there, what their plight is today, and whether or not if the farmers and ranchers there gave up all of their water, if it would make any real significant difference in the numbers of coho that we could raise on the Scott and or Shasta rivers. Could you comment on that for us, John?
I could comment extensively, and I'll do it. You control me a little bit if something interests you more. The coho salmon, as well as steelhead, can be viewed as the nomads of the Pacific Ocean. They're wide, very wide-ranging species, both of them. They range all the way over to Russia in the North Pacific, down to probably south of San Francisco, although their numbers dwindle severely as you get further south in hotter climates. The reason I mention that is I do believe that the coho salmon were native to the Klamath River watershed, but their abundance was always extremely low. They're a wide-ranging species. They're largely a coastal spawner everywhere in their range, and expecting to have coho in a healthy population this far from the river, more than 200 linear miles of migration, is extremely unusual for a coho. They can travel that far and they can survive, but they have the unique need of having to oversummer before they smolt and go back to the ocean, and that's the big distinction between that salmon species and all other salmon species, particularly here in the Chinook as the dominant one. The reason that's a problem here and in California and anywhere south of here is that the water temperatures get so high naturally due to our Mediterranean climate pipe that we have in California, with hot summers and no virtually no cloud cover from May through November normally, except in periodic thunderstorm events, which are very rare here these days with some climate changes we're seeing. So coho really never were abundant much except within 25 miles of the ocean in California, where you have the summer fog belt making my father, when he retired from Sacramento, moved over to Little River by Mendocino. We visited him for many, many times with our young children, and often you would not even see the sun until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that kind of a fog belt, consistent fog belt during the hot summer period, is why coho can do nice in coastal streams in California, but not inland this far. And the unfortunate thing that's happened here, it seems to be a big agenda from the government. They got the fish listed as a separate ecological unit here, the Southern Oregon, Northern California Salk, as they call it, as a separate unit, and that was done primarily to get the fish listed. And so what we're living here as landowners today is a legacy of a listing of a fish that was never abundant here, but certainly came here sometimes, and repopulated a lot of the creeks and rivers around here and has provided a basis for a big battle. But in fact, the fish was never abundant here. And if people don't know it, the Klamath River was exploited heavily around 1900, and all the salmon were wiped out on the Klamath River by canneries down at the town of Klamath or nearby the estuary there. And there was such concern that forerunners of the Fish and Game Agency began efforts to restock the Klamath River in 1900. And there was as many as 2.5 million coho, for instance, raised in hatcheries up here, high up in the Klamath River, to try and restock fish when it wasn't known about their limitations. And, of course, they did the same thing with the Chinook. And they got another good run of Chinook and coho going. That started about 1895, and the big plants were in the early 1900s, around 1913, 1918, along in there. And then that they dropped that program, and it wasn't until there were other periodic hatcheries on Fall Creek and other places before the Iron Gate hatchery came in. But basically, since 62, the regular planting of 75,000 per year has maintained the population. And now what we have is the government and the environmental groups using this as a device and as a tactic to remove agriculture from here today and blame everything on agriculture, when in fact we have very exploitive fishing going on in the ocean, as well as extreme netting pressure and other means by Native Americans in the Klamath River itself, with really no direct oversight and monitoring by any government agency. So we have what's called today is a tragedy of the commons, like what took place in sub-Saharan Africa with respect to nomadic grazing by people with Native people with flocks of sheep. We have a tragedy of the commons of a fish here, and with the pressure being used by a fish that really was not abundant here, but is more abundant today now than it probably ever was, and the waxing and waning of that fish is being used as a pry to eliminate agricultural practices here very inappropriately, because climates here doesn't allow the coho to be successful. Chinook, yes, they come here in the fall and leave in the spring, don't have to be here over a summer. Coho, no, they'll never be successful here. And we've got agencies now that have been lined up by the environmental groups, largely, because the agencies don't even understand this, or if they do, they don't voice it, and they go along with the outfits that are trying to remove people. We're going toward Dr. Reed Noss's plan called the Wildlands Project, and all of Siskiyou County is in a wildlife corridor, and this area is not scheduled for human habitation. Maybe the Native Americans, which they're truly not Native either, they came across the Bering Strait at low ocean levels back about 10 to 14,000 years ago. They all came from Asia in here. They've been here a lot longer than us, and I agree they have more call on the area than we do, because we've only been here since the Gold Rush. But really, it's an unfair unrepresentation of a species capability, and it's creating a tremendous mess.
Well, John, thank you very much. That was a tremendous explanation. So informative. I learned more there in 10 minutes than I've learned by reading every article that's been printed in the local paper. So I hope our program today is a great service to our listeners, and I'm sure it will be. I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us. I'd like to do it again, because I believe you could offer additional information about the Klamath River, for example, as a whole. But your explanation of this situation with the coho is just an outstanding and very understandable one, and I thank you very, very much.